Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your loved ones. We will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to someone that you know can benefit from it. And I guarantee you, you will know someone who can benefit from this show. Now, I also want you to know that I am truly grateful to all of you that take your time to listen to or now watch this show, and especially those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions, because please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten a copy of our Attitude Gratitude Journal, please go to our website at answers.network or answersforthefamily.com and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your loved ones. Now, a couple of quotes, and although they are not in the journal, I want you to know that they're very topical as it relates to today. One is, encourage and support your kids, because children are apt to live up to whatever you believe in them. That's by Lady Bird Johnson, who's the former First Lady of the United States. The second one is, parenting without a sense of humor is like being an accountant who sucks at math. So that one is by Amber Dusick. So just remember that, there are lots of things that that we can be doing to do the very best that we can in regards to teenagers. And let's think about that, because when we think about the teenage years, many parents fear this stage. They're dreading it, even while watching their adorable toddlers explore the world. But when it arrives, many try to control their teenager, in turn causing their teenager to push back more intensely. It's a natural instinct on both sides. Teenagers are trying to assert their independence, while parents are faced with challenges of coming up with rules, expectations, and standards of behavior. And too often, this results in a parent-child relationship defined by conflict and reactivity. So it's a breeding ground for stress, anger, anxiety, all of which reinforces those same cultural stereotypes and our worst fears. Now, our topic today is also the title of our guest's new book, Rethinking Your Teenager, Shifting from Control and Conflict to Structure and Nurture to Raise Accountable Young Adults. Our guest, Darby Fox, is a child and adolescent family therapist in private practice in Connecticut and New York. With over 20 years' experience, she is an expert on parenting, child psychology, and family topics. Appearing regularly on air and in print media, Darby covers a range of topics from parenting questions and discipline techniques to current trends in child development. Now, she is also in collaboration to develop a television series called Fractured Family with Darby Fox. Darby, welcome to Answers Network.
Alan, thank you for having me today.
Well, it is my pleasure. And, you know, one of the things that I thought of right off the bat, and as I mentioned in the introduction, was I mentioned stereotypes. So many of us, grew up with them. So can you share some of those stereotypes and why they're no longer correct and how they can be damaging?
I think that especially when we come to that age group, adolescence, there's a lot of stereotypes. I think the most common that comes to mind is my kids just hate me and all they'll do is listen to their friends. Another one is, they're so lazy. They just sleep so late. They stay up all night if they would just listen. I think multitasking, and another one is that piece that they have no respect for anyone. They don't care about anybody but themselves. I think those are some of the most prominent we hear again. And people think that frequently, oh, my daughter's 13 or my son is 13. There's nothing I can do. I just have to wait until they hit their 20s and they come back to me. And I always hear that and think, oh, actually, that's not true. There's a lot you can be doing. So,
I've made the statement before, and I'm not even sure if I've done it on the air as well, but, I've said, that at about anywhere from 13 to 14, whatever, that sticks in our head as parents, and it sucks out half of our brain. And so the parents will kind of, laugh about that, and I'll go, but the beauty of it is that generally after they get into their 20s, somehow we got all that intelligence back,
It's us, right?
Yeah.
I think one of the hardest things is, as parents, which is pretty logical, you think, oh my gosh, I know what I was like. So if I control them, then they're not going to do that, which is actually kind of counter to any human interaction. The more you try and control, the less you'll gain control, and particularly with an adolescent. So I wrote this book to try, because in working with families so often, no one really wants to have a bad relationship or a lot of conflict, a lot of struggle, but they don't really know how to do it any differently. And one thing I like to remind adolescents is your parents typically didn't have a child like this before. They haven't really spent a lot of time in this space. So if we could just work together towards sort of a general, you don't get what you want necessarily, but there are ways to get around it. So I like to remind adolescents also, parents aren't always really well-equipped in this stage.
And, I like that. And because I think I've taken sort of the other side of that, where I've explained to parents that they need to regain their memory and remember what they were like then.
If you can make that connection, and, there's all kinds of fancy psychological terms, mentalization, and all these different words we could use for it. But it's really that piece of taking a moment and saying, have I experienced this? What did I do? And maybe, do I understand where they're coming from? And how could I do it differently? And just that simple awareness, like, oh, wait a sec. Oh, I did that once. Kind of can allow you to just go down a notch and open up the ability to maybe listen or perceive in a way that you hadn't before.
Now, how much benefit is it to be able to really get them to understand that every generation changes, so that the idea of going into it and going, but the way that we did it was like this and it worked, and to explain that, to try to get them, again, I go back to the memory thing of, yeah, but how did that work for you when your parents put what their generation believed at that time on you? You didn't like it. And yet now you're saying, I'm going to do the same thing and put it on my kids, and right, you don't understand why they're not listening.
Exactly. So I think with that, what I love to think about, and I think it's particularly important right now as we've just gone through the, because I feel we're getting to the end of the global pandemic, or at least the height of the crisis. So I think one thing that's really important to remember there is, if we teach our kids and raise our kids with a certain foundation, and we do trust them to make some decisions, knowing that all of them aren't going to be good, there's going to be some failures and some real, right turns, that we then can allow for something like what has happened to us now. We can build in this set of this foundation, so when things aren't what they're supposed to be, you can actually have a, you can go somewhere, you can adapt, you can be flexible. What we don't do well as parents is we say, oh, well, that's not that it was. And you don't get it. I can't do what you're telling me because of social media. Social media never used to exist. All of that is true, but all of those pieces that are generational are only generational, and they don't impact us at a core human level. So people are still the same. Mm-hmm. internally. And that's where we want to make sure those are the pieces that we're really focusing on instead of the external piece, because that we can't control.
And so how much of this, and I understand what you're saying from the standpoint of, you know, it's more, it's internal, but it's also, it's who's right there with them, not necessarily the person that's on a screen. One of the things I've looked at a lot, but it has to do with just being there and some of the changes that started to happen. I spoke one time and I said, well, one of the biggest problems I believe is, you know, absentee father, either mentally or physically. Because it's one thing to not be there because you're working 16 hours a day, because you were raised to believe that your whole value is based on your ability to provide for your family, and that was drilled into your head. But if you're home and you're not there mentally, is it just as bad?
It is just as bad. It definitely is just, I mean, I kind of jumped to answer that because I think it's such an important thing that especially parents who are working all day and they have to make different childcare arrangements or they're not around for whatever reason, they feel that disconnect. But also the mom who's around all day, who's on the phone, headed to exercise class, talking to her friends, picks the kids up from school, is back on the phone. And I myself have found times where my kids were like, what did I just say? You weren't listening. And I'll be like, yep, you're right. I wasn't. So I think they are very sensitive to that. And most adolescents don't need tons of your time. I mean, they've got a lot going on and they really do want to be with their peers. But they need to know that there is a sense of safety and security. And that is basically any child from a newborn, you know, well into your 20s. All I need to know is I'm safe and I'm trusted. That's what we need if we really boil it down.
Well, you brought up trust, and that was actually a little later, I was going to go to a particular question, but because you brought up trust, I want to touch on it now. One of the biggest issues that we run into when we're working with teens that have made some bad choices is, well, my parents don't trust me, and the reason that I'm in trouble is because they were searching my room and they found my drugs. Right. Well, this becomes this weird balance of, yes, we want to trust, but at the same time, we need to keep them safe. And safe also means not having illegal drugs that you're using, you know. So how does a parent look at this and balance it? Because, you know, I talk to some parents that are like, you know, I put, you know, equipment on their phone, you know, tracking equipment on their phone and on their computer, and I can check everything that they ever key down and, you know, and stuff. And I'm like, you know, there needs to be a balance here, you know, of trust, but yet keep them safe.
Right. So I think with that, that's a great question. And I think that a lot of times for adolescents, they feel trust and love are on the same line. They're the same word. Right. If you love me, you trust me. And so what happens with any adolescent that's gone through some trouble, or basically any adolescent, because there's always something they're doing that we don't really know about, the party, you know, going to your friend's house could really be a party and they think we may not know that. We kind of get that. So I think what we want to really do is talk earlier on to your kids about, I will always love you, but part of my job is to keep you safe. And I trust you until you break it. It doesn't take away my love, but then we have to rebuild trust so that they're not the same. Because adolescents, especially troubled ones, feel like if you don't trust me, you don't love me. Okay?
That's a great point.
And that's a real break right there. And that's hard to get beyond. So that's a really important thing that as a parent, you're clear on, and then you can explain that clearly to your adolescent. I will track you as long as you're not ever showing up, or whatever that piece may be.
Yeah. I, and I think to sort of give another example of that, the concept of tracking, and one of the things that I did with my sons, which was, I want you to know that you can call me to come get you at any time. Whatever it is that's going on, I'm not going to focus on what's going on there. I'm going to focus on getting you out of there. I need to trust that you are not going to get into a vehicle with somebody who has been drinking or done drugs, and want you to know that you can call me and I'm going to come get you, even if you're somewhere where you weren't supposed to be, because my love is such that I'm going to be focused on that. Sometime after that, we'll talk about the other part of that. But, you know, so I love how you explained it, because they tie the two together.
Right.
You know, and but from my standpoint, it was just that, you know, I don't want to have to do those other types of things. So if I know that you will call me no matter what, then I don't have to worry and I don't feel like I have to track you, because I trust that you're going to make the right decision. And at that moment, the right decision is, I'm not getting in Johnny's car because I saw Johnny drinking at such and such a party.
And I think that's a very important way to approach adolescents as they start to go out and do things more on their own. We have to remember, they really aren't going to be good in the moment. That is a given. So if we take what we know neurologically, the myth is they're just not listening to me, or they just don't care about me. The actual fact, the science is, neurologically, an adolescent brain is growing and expanding at a rate like no other, except possibly in utero. So they're thinking, we're kind of getting them ready for the big world. So they're hardwired to seek novelty things, new things, and gratification. What would be fun? What would be exciting? And they skip the neurotransmitters, the GABA, that say, stop, think about that. Maybe not a great choice. Mm-hmm. That is just run right over. They say something like 5 times to 1, you get the go versus the stop neurotransmitter. If you know that, it doesn't mean you're going to prevent trouble or bad decisions, but it means understand what they're shooting for, which is gratification, something really fun, and preview with them, well, if this happens, this is how it could end up. Think about where you're going or what you might be doing in the future. It's not going to prevent everything, but it does go a long way in stopping some of that, because they've heard it before and they're like, wait, okay, my dad said this. He said, don't do this, and I can call him. Okay, I'm good. I'll call him. All right. So we have to know better. As parents, we should educate ourselves more on actually what is this developing teenager? What is developing and where are they? So then we can kind of help them along. And that's where I would like to be very clear, Alan. I think that title, I don't know if it's my favorite title, but what I think is kind of misleading is people think if it says we're not going to control you and we're going to have structure and nurture, I think that kind of those are, you know, on other ends of the spectrum. So it's sort of like, oh, I'm just going to say everything's okay and I love you a lot and you can do whatever you want if I don't control you. And what I want to say instead is there is a whole lot in between there that is the most significant piece of not only raising an adolescent, but connecting to human beings, to teaching kids how to be responsible and accountable to human beings.
Well, and it sounds like that piece in between is communication. And,
exactly.
And one of the things that I get from lots of parents when I talk to them about communicating, or I'll ask them, well, how are you communicating about this? And they'll go, I can't communicate with them. I don't even understand what they're saying. So how do we decode the language of the teenager in order to communicate with them and at the same time keep or gain their respect?
I think that's really important and frequently. So we have this notion, we say, let's communicate with your teenagers. And I think every day, at least twice, I have someone saying to me, I asked them how their day was and they don't even respond. And I say, well, how do you like answering that question? Like basically most of us go through our days we go to work, we do whatever, and someone's like, how was your day? You're sort of like, fine. Like, it's not a conversation starter. It kind of, especially if you're an adolescent, you're just like, stop. But if you take the time, don't do it right when you pick them up from school or the minute they walk through the door, but at dinner or later on, ask them about something. Oh, I heard these kids at school did this weekend. Do you know anything? Do you know about them? Or are they talking about what happened on the news? There was this big, you know, if it's a girl, you say, did you see that interview? Let's watch the Meghan Markle interview mm-hmm. last night. You pick up something that's of interest that you might say to a friend, and then let them speak. Just let them talk. And that is communication as opposed to this, you know, we'll have a family meeting, we'll sit down, we'll discuss our complaints. That never works.
Well, and what I like about what you just said is that the questions you were talking about were not the kind of questions that can be answered with, fine.
Yes.
Because you know, and the parent goes, so how was your day? Fine. And that ends the communication, as opposed to you have questions that are a little more, there's a little more meat to it, to where you can't just say fine or yes or okay. You know, they have to go a little bit deeper, even if they maybe don't want to at that moment.
Yeah, even to this day, and my kids are young adults, and I will ask them, like, I'll get someone will say something or use a word. I'm not quite sure. I'll text my sons and say, is this right? Or am I using this properly? And I know that they've probably got some back chatter going on their text. Like, can you believe mom just asked that? But to my point, that's even a connection. That's me sort of saying, hey, do you guys know this? Can you help me out? We also aren't good at ever saying, what do you know that could help me?
Great, yes.
And how do you have a relationship with anyone that's just based on one direction? It's not a great relationship.
Yeah, and no, I think that's perfect. And I think that like computers and social media and things that are a lot newer to us as parents are perfect opportunities to be able to go, you know, I'm having a little trouble with this particular word program while I'm trying to write something. Maybe you can help me. And they come over and it takes them like 10 seconds to fix it. You know, and I've just been working on it for 30 minutes trying to figure out how to do it, you know, but they feel good after that. You've made them feel good because they've been able to exercise how much smarter they are on that particular subject.
So. And that's an important sort of inroad to saying to them, so this is your world and this is what you do and you get it. And I actually do sort of know how this partying, drinking thing's going to play out, you know, the driving, the whatever. And I'm not saying you're going to do it, but I'm just aware of this. So I want you to know this is what I'm thinking about and set that self up. We could do a lot better job. The premise of any kid or adolescent, even up into adulthood, is there's basically two questions. They say, am I loved? And can I have what I want? And I think it's very important to answer those questions. You're absolutely loved, but you don't necessarily get what you want. Mm-hmm. And if we work from that basis, then we are, if that's sort of your mindset, then that's how you go into life, thinking, okay, where am I? And what's good? What's bad? What can I take? It's a much different attitude than going in there and trying to control someone, because that automatically brings up defenses. And I don't care what it is, you're getting some pushback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you brought up a great point from the standpoint of, you know, you're not getting everything that you want. And I think that there's many parents that make this mistake. And I, in speaking with one mom, and I was explaining what I thought she needed to do to set some boundaries. Yeah. And she said, well, she goes, if I do that, she won't like me. And I stopped for a minute and I said, do you realize what a mom is supposed to do? It is not be their best friend. You have to be able to set boundaries, you know, and stuff. So I get it. That's why it's a balance.
It is. And the boundaries are so important. And I think that's where people, as parents, I would say, I hate to, you know, generalize, but the one thing we're really poor at is consistency. So we set a rule or we make a boundary and then we just let it go or we break it. And any adolescent knows that. The thing I see most often in my practice is people trying to punish their adolescent. And that is, I'm going to take their phone. Mm-hmm. There's no connection most often with what they're doing wrong that you don't like, with the behavior that doesn't work with the phone. Like, they're just totally different worlds. Mm-hmm. And if you take an adolescent's phone, they probably have an iPad, a sibling with a phone, friends with a phone,
watch,
you know, the computer. I mean, they can wire anything, right? I can't, but they can. It's so they kind of look at you and they're like, yeah, right, take my phone. Not a huge deal. And then it quickly becomes really inconvenient for us when you've got to reach them or you've got to pick them up or you've got to know that their sibling's coming to get them and there's no phone. So you give their phone back. So then everything's just kind of a matter of getting through that piece. And there's no real connection. And if we want to change someone's behavior, we have to connect to how or why it didn't work and what's an alternative. Mm-hmm. And frequently, we need to sort of say, this is the alternative.
Yeah, no, I love that because it's so true that, you know, and we all do it. And in many cases, it's because it's easier to roll over than it was to do it. Because if it's, for instance, so they're grounded and they have to stay home and it's like, wait a minute, that means I have to stay home and watch them, you know? So it's, well, you know what? You still have to follow through.
Yeah, I think that's super important. It's like, okay, I love you to death, but you know, you weren't here. You broke your curfew. So you're in this weekend and you know what? That means I'm here too. And that's where you've got to be willing to make that sacrifice. But then let the punishment piece go. Okay, so should we get pizza and what movie do you want to watch? Like, don't make it this mean, you know, sort of angry thing. Be like, you know what? This is what happens when you don't, you chose a consequence. You chose the consequence. And that's actually kind of a fun way you say humor, use humor. You chose the consequence of staying home with me this weekend and watching a movie, right? Like, and not make it this punitive, shaming thing. Because also that's, teenagers are very, sensitive about shaming.
Mm-hmm. All right. We are speaking with Darby Fox, and we are talking about teenagers. We're going to take a break, but when we come right back, I'd like to know a little bit more about some win-win situations when your teenager is just really upset. All right. We'll be right back. Stay with us. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We're talking with Darby Fox. We're talking about rethinking your teenagers. And when we went to break, I asked a little bit about finding some win-win situations. So, Darby, give us a couple of examples, because I know the situation really changes what it, you know, what the solution is, but how do we create win-win situations when a teen comes to us and they're upset? And if they come to us, That means that, first of all, it's a good sign that they are coming to us, but we still need to have some win-win type of solutions for them.
So I think it's really important. That's a great question. It's important. It does depend on the circumstance. But when they come to you and they're upset, one thing you want to do almost immediately is see, is this the right time? Say to them, I see you're really upset with me, or you're really disappointed with me. I think we need to discuss that. Would you like to do it now, or should we wait a little bit? Because typically it helps. It's almost like the 24-hour rule. Don't ever call someone you're angry with. Give it 24 hours and then see how you feel then. It again, you. But maybe we need to just de-escalate a little bit, because at any time with human nature, when you're in an emotional state, when we're running on emotions, we're not making our best decisions. The emotional part of your brain is sort of in the middle to the lower back here, the fight, flight, or freeze. And it really prevents you from going to the prefrontal cortex, the executive function part of your brain. And that's kind of, again, we're made that way to protect ourselves. We'll keep you breathing and living and whatever else, but we really aren't going to focus on your higher level functioning. So I think it's really important that family fight suddenly becomes so much less significant if we can give it a little bit of space, whether that be even an hour or 2 hours or the next morning. But it's super important for parents. The win piece is to say, I hear you. I can understand why you're really upset. But I think you may have missed my perspective, or you didn't understand what so-and-so was saying. So let's visit this. Just that simple acknowledgement, I hear you, that validation is about the biggest win-win you can have. Most people don't allow someone they're angry with. We don't give them space to express themselves. And teens are really prime for that. They need to know someone's going to care.
There's a question that's coming in now that kind of touches on this shift that many parents talk about, to where, you know, on one day they go, wow, yesterday it seemed like I had a tween and they would come in and give me a hug and they were all loving. And then junior high or high school hit and all of a sudden they changed. This particular question says, granted, now that she is moving from junior high to high school, we are seeing a more distant and negative personality emerging. We can feel that she resents spending even the most minimal amount of time with her parents or us, which is breaking our hearts. My son and his wife are very close, and I'm hoping that together we might be able to find ways to turn this around. I'm hoping you might share your thoughts. And are there any approaches in your book that would be helpful to us? This is from Tammy in Wisconsin.
Tammy, that is a great question. And I think throughout, I just want to kind of make a quick statement about the book, Alan, that it's not meant to be. You could sit down and read it like a regular novel, cover to cover. But really what it's meant to be is more of a manual. So if you're having struggles in a particular area, you maybe read there and there are usually suggestions, and then think, okay, what part of this works for me? What part may not work for me? How is this particular? And I think that, Tammy, that's a good way to look at this. The piece of that going from junior high to high school, ninth grade is pretty much horrible for, you know, any adolescent. It's just girls for one reason, boys for another, they overlap. It can be really, really difficult. And teens feel it all personally. And because they can't really focus on their peer group, you've got to be pretty careful how you respond. The people that can get that sort of disgruntled anxiety is what it probably is, the unsettled teen that's kind of nasty, are the parents or maybe the grandparents. But what I'd like you to do is think about ways that you ask them. You say to her, I get you don't always want to be with your dad and I, but we miss you. Just that, we miss you. Kids are like, what? Like, they just think you want to control them and tell them what to do. But when they actually hear, oh, I miss you, what could I do with you? It could be a very quick, you know, pizza. We'll grab a slice of pizza before we drop you with your friends. Could be 15 minutes. The dinner often becomes, I know a lot of people aren't going to like this, that we all have to sit down at the table every night for dinner. That doesn't necessarily always happen. I had just one son home through high school. And once he got very busy, he came home. It was his only downtime in the day. It would be kind of awkward for us to sit at the table and just like think of things to say. So we would watch a show. We would watch something, eat our dinner, kind of talk back and forth. And that was what we did. That was our time. And then he would go to his room and study until the next day. So whatever that piece of little bit of connection, that's really important. And I want you to ask for it. Your kids are never going to know how to ask for things in relationships if you don't show them. So you say, you know what? Your grandparents are missing you so much. Do you think you could FaceTime them? Or do you think what day would work for you? So put a little of that back in your child's lap. Like, what works for you to connect with these people? We don't want to let them off the hook entirely. They don't have to go spend the whole weekend, but it is important that they know your grandparents have always taken great care of you. They love you and they miss you. You'll need to find time for these important people, but adjust it.
Right. And what I love about what you said was that you were asking, you know, you're asking them when would be a good time. So asking, and I think that we get caught up sometimes as parents in telling.
Very, very much so.
Yeah, but so I'm saying, I just want to make sure everybody else heard that as well. You know, that those little things, just a difference of a couple of words, allows them to continue to listen and not shut you off. So.
And that's really important. And acknowledge, I know it might be kind of boring just to sit here with Dad and I for dinner, and you're thinking of, you can't wait to get off and, you know, get on Snapchat. But when would be a time that we could do something without phones? And they're like, what? You're asking me instead of telling me. It goes a really long way towards connection. Keep it small and ask for it. And that small piece, it builds into more.
So I want to talk a little bit about providing tools. I think it's really important that we as parents, part of our job is that we're going to provide tools so that they will make better decisions. Talk a little bit about that fine line between giving them tools to make better decisions so that they don't take this as, well, you're controlling me by telling me I have to do this. You know, it's this really fine balance that I think a lot of us struggle with.
Well, I think the really important piece there is, there's an acronym that I love to use, and it's called ACT, A-C-T. So it's acknowledge, like, that they may not want to hear you, communicate what you're asking for, and then target sort of what's the end line, what's the limit. So if it's something with academics, I hear you don't want me to be involved in your academics, but it actually is important to your dad and I that these are the grades you get. And this is kind of, if they fall below this, we're not going to be able, you know, you're choosing to not go see your friends on the weekend. So you want to make it really clear, always kind of putting back on your adolescent. The tool is, how can I help you meet this goal? And that doesn't mean I'm going to do your homework for you or hire the tutor, but this is what's expected and this is why we need this. And what can I do to help you get here? I can think it through with you. I can do all these different things, but this is kind of the end line. You'll have some kids, even in the same family, that'll be like, I got it. Don't need you. And they take it on. Some others will be like, what are you talking about? I have no idea how to even get there. And that is something, then we scaffold it down into little pieces. Make a plan and break it down. You could apply that to almost anything you do. What do I need to do? I'm going to make a plan and I'm going to break it into pieces. for parents in anything you're trying to get your child to do, that's a really good way to start. Because what it allows for is you can pick and choose a little bit. And some adolescents, they want to actually be the one that chooses what goes first and what goes second. Yeah. So let them do the second thing first and the second thing, the first thing second, however that works. But we get caught up in saying, I know I'm right. This is what you need to do. And that's the end line. What we need to say is, this is what we'd really like. How can we help you get there? That tool is, and if they're really faltering and following far short, you got to bring it in. And you got to say, okay, this is what I said, but you couldn't do it. So actually, your dad and I are going to give you some help here. And this is what we're going to do. We can see you can't quite do that. It implies that you have it's like raising adolescents. It's kind of like a net. You want the net there. And the net should get kind of a little more open as we go through adolescence. But there still needs to be a net there to sort of say, okay, when you can't make it or you don't know what to do, I'm going to jump in, but I'm going to let you go ahead and try. Really important that we allow them to try. As parents, it's hard to let them go. We think our way is the way. Not necessarily.
Well, and so while we're talking about as far as training or learning, things have completely changed. So let's talk about online learning a little bit, because this is something now that is even more foreign to us as parents. But yet, in most cities still, the kids have been forced into this, as this is the only option that they're being given. So let's talk a little bit about what we can do to help as parents, or even tips for the adolescents themselves or for the kids themselves, because, you know, I'm hoping that some of the parents are going to, and they're going to listen to this show and go, you know what, I should watch this show with my adolescent, you know, so that they can watch our show right now and take some of these things with them. So if you were talking to both parent and teen, what would you tell them on the best way to handle this online learning situation that they're thrown in?
I would say it is, at this stage, it's not the best way for anyone to learn, but adolescents do have the ability intellectually, neurologically to learn online, but they are completely overloaded. So expecting them to be on there hour after hour and really embrace it and take things in is not a healthy expectation. And one thing we can really do, parents and adolescents, is know we have to set up a schedule. Go ahead and put structure back where structure was taken away. Get out of bed. Parents, require your kids to do online school at a desk, at a table, in the kitchen, wherever it is, seated. Not lying in bed in their sweats with the, you know, box, no video on. Yeah. You know, because they're just not going to take it in. That's not like calling them out or being mean. If I blank my screen right now, I mean, I could be doing a million things, check my phone, straighten my books, like whatever it is. So I think it's really important that parents say, I'm going to impose some structure on this, but I do realize you can't sit there endlessly on Zoom. So between classes or the reality is, someone's not going to focus for more than 25 to 30 minutes. The people that are having Zoom classes for 45 or 55 minutes, you've spent 20 minutes of, you know, kids are texting, they're doing other things. Like it's just not happening because we don't concentrate for that long. So I think it's really important that parents realize, okay, get up and take a break. That requires leaving the room, get a snack, even step outside. Really important pieces to sort of let the brain get a moment to reset and then sit back and do it. Again, parents, don't insist your kids just do homework the minute they get off that Zoom call for the day. Have something, let them go do something else and exercise. Get some exercise and then come back to it. Mm-hmm. The kind of work is different. If teachers are really good at this stage, they're engaging in group projects because that is one thing that it gives us that we don't normally have, is the ability to work with each other. And otherwise, lower your expectations. Some people will be, how can you say that? The reality is we need to learn from this time and space, the last year, something different. That's okay. I can't do it the way I did it before. So what can I embrace here? What can I work on that really isn't going to be Zoom learning? Maybe I'm not great at math online. I've got to be in the room. I've got to pick up the cues, whatever that is. So I think we need to lower our expectation on the achievement of online learning.
Well, we have another question that's coming in. And again, I want to thank everybody that takes the time to do this because it's much appreciated. I know some people send it in the night before because they're working. This one touches on a subject that statistics show has been increasing during this COVID pandemic. This one reads, I was changing shifts when one of our younger nurses came up to me visibly shaken. She shared that her younger sister, 16 years old, had tried to commit suicide the day before. With parents struggling to keep their own lives and businesses afloat during the COVID situation, they did not realize how serious the situation truly was. Your book seems to be one that addresses many ways to help families pass normal teen issues. So I purchased a copy for my young friend. Can you give us some insight on this deeply troubling issue that we all seem to be facing now? And this is from Karen in New York.
We have seen an incredible escalation in mental health issues over the last year. Sadly, little kids, 5 to 11, we've seen it increase close to 25%. And kids older, 11 to 17, it's gone up probably 30%. The piece of isolation and disconnection is almost, it's read in an adolescent's brain as pain. Rejection and isolation, we can actually see if we have an MRI that it registers as if they were actually physically in pain. So if we know that, and what is happening, everything's external. If you can't have contact with your friends, you're seeing what everybody else is doing or saying they're doing. The depth of isolation increases so exponentially that these kids think, actually, when I get out of this pandemic, I don't even know how I could ever get back there. It's very sad. And there's no, it's like, it's almost a, I have no idea how I will ever fit in again. There's nothing they can do in this world that would seem reasonable to find help with. So it turns internally. And that means if all these other guys are having fun and I'm experiencing what I am, I'm a loser. It must be me. It's very, very sad. What I would start with in a very general sort of way is remove the social media, the extreme, that constant hours. I would not let your kids have the phone or the iPad overnight so that when they're not sleeping at 1 a.m., they're connecting to we don't know what, but something that says they don't belong. It just gets pushed in. The influencers, all of that is very crazy. And I think what you really need to do is possibly get them some help, get them a therapist or someone that they can talk to about bringing things back into balance. Really require some live interaction with sports, music, whatever art. Art is tremendously healing, but I want it live art. We want to get them off the computer screen and re-engage them in what may seem real. Really important that they realize there's a distinction between the worlds. And that's the first step.
Yeah. And I think to add to that, when you were doing the arts and things like that, and I was thinking about humor,
And humor's tremendous.
Yeah. Bring humor into your family, into your life. Do whatever you can to bring humor in. I think it's so therapeutic.
And make in that, make fun of yourself. And another piece you might suggest, I think it's your sister, excuse me for the connection, but you you want to ask as adults. One thing that's very hard for adolescents is we may seem like we have it all together and we present that everything's just fine through all of this. One of the greatest way to connect with adolescents is to let them know some of the things you have a hard time with. Yeah. What you really miss, if you're really exhausted, you're working day and night trying to make ends meet because of the change in the pandemic. Say what is hard for you. Show yourself to be vulnerable. Yeah. Once someone says, oh my gosh, my mom is having a hard time and oh, I might be able to help her. Anytime you can draw your attention away from yourself and think you might have a value for someone else, it goes light years towards healing.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. Time has flown by, Darby. Thank you so much, not only for writing the book, but for coming on the show and you know, for everybody out there. What is the best way? I assume it's available at most places, but what is the best way to be able to get a hold of you or the best way to be able to get the book?
The book, it's pretty easy, Amazon.com. It's published by Oxford University Press, so OxfordUniversity.com. Mm-hmm. It's pretty available. But for me, my website is Darby Fox at DarbyFox.com. It has all the contact numbers, and I really love to answer the questions or help out that way. It doesn't need to be a formal engagement of ongoing work. If I can help, I'd love to.
Thank you so much. And thank you for touching on a subject at a time in which I think we dearly need it. So thank you.
Thank you for having me, Alan.
You're welcome. And now for everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we are joined by Dr. Elizabeth Englander to discuss her new book. And it's interesting that we had just talked about humor as one of the things that that we can all use more of, because her book is The Insanely Awesome Pandemic Playbook. It's a humorous mental health guide for kids. This book is designed to address the problems our children are facing right now, but it's doing it using funny and engaging writing and hands-on activities to teach them how to deal with their screen use, their mental health, and their social relationships. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network or subscribe to the show through iTunes, iHeart, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, and many other popular podcasts platforms. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It'll help us bring you the content that you truly want, and it will help other people know that that somebody else is appreciating it as well. So for everybody out there, please just be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.